This episode is sponsored by Launch. Are you an insurance agent that is tired of quoting business to try and find a better premium to win new deals? Are you looking for a way to differentiate and stand out from your competition? Well, look no further than Launch. Launch is an industry-leading software platform that gives you pre-built assessments that you can walk through with your prospect. Launch automatically calculates your prospect's risk score, and this allows you to show your prospect the areas you can fix to negotiate better premium and coverage with underwriters. Offer more value to your clients, turn missed sales into closed business, and most of all, become a better advisor to your clients. Visit getlaunch.io today to get more information on how you can use Launch to win more BORs starting right now. That's getlaunch.io to learn more.
All right, welcome to the Sales Process Series. We are really excited about this. And what this series is an interview with several different top producers in the insurance industry. These are folks that are absolutely killing it. They're over doubling their new business revenue over industry averages and doing it through a consistent sales process. And so we're having these conversations to pull out those themes that are really working for those individuals and really give them to you so that you can double your new business revenue. So enjoy the episode and look for more episodes in our sales process series. All right, Josh, well, welcome to the show. We're excited to have you on for our sales process series.
Well, I'm glad to be here with you fine gentlemen today. It's a beautiful day in Georgia, and nothing I'd rather do than talk about insurance.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what we do on this show. So we have some fun doing it, though, you know, and talk about where this industry is going and what we're doing. And today, specifically focusing on the sales side of the industry. So with that being said, kind of why don't you give everybody your background on who you are, what you're doing, all that stuff, and then we'll kind of dive into sales process stuff.
Yeah, so my name's Josh Gurley, and I'm located right in the center of Georgia. Everybody thinks about Georgia like Atlanta. I tell people that Georgia's like really two states. You have Atlanta, and then you have everywhere else. And so I'm pretty much in the everywhere else part of the state. I live about an hour and 20 minutes south of the airport, if that gives anybody an idea, in a little town called Perry, Georgia. There's not a whole lot that we have here. We do have the Georgia National Fair that comes through Perry every single year. And the Allman Brothers started not too far from here in Macon, Georgia. So if you like some Southern rock, classic rock music, absolutely. The Allman Brothers, Little Richard, he started down here, and Otis Redding. So we have some of that kind of stuff going on. But I've been in the agency business somewhere around 10 years. I started out, I worked for an insurance company, and I was a marketing rep, and I did some underwriting, which gave me a good background on how insurance companies think. Yeah. And that served me pretty well over the years. And so I came into the business as a producer. I didn't start an agency from scratch. I got lots of opinions on that, but that may not be what we talk about today, but I'm willing to talk about that. There's a lot of people starting from scratch that, you know, it may or may not be the best route. And so I just did what most, you know, people have traditionally done before it became really easy to start an agency. I produced my way, and I became a partner in the company, and we're in the process of finishing up another round of stock purchase and things like that. So we got 12 people here, and about 75% commercial lines, maybe 2-3% employee benefits, and then the rest is personal lines. So mostly middle market commercial lines is what we do.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. That's a good background for everybody. Kind of frame it up. We might get into that conversation. I'm curious now about your thoughts there. But I also, though, don't want to skip over where you were on a reality show. Am I correct?
So I was a coach on the reality show.
Ah, there it was. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. My team, my guy finished in second place. Unfortunately, he was not the winner. But, you know, Derek Hayden was the winner. Justin Sloan was my guy. But Derek Hayden, we really underestimated when we were choosing teams the power of a small community. Like, we really thought the insurance community was going to be behind us. Me and Bradley Flowers did. And at the time, I really didn't know a whole lot of people in the insurance industry. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't really, I was just doing my own thing until COVID. Yeah. And there was this whole, you know, 14 days to slow the spread. And I mean, it was like, you know, whether it slowed or not, I'm not here to debate that. But, you know, it was during that time, right? And I was just sitting around just bored to tears because nobody was working. Everybody was trying to figure out how they were going to maneuver themselves. I mean, nobody was really buying a whole lot of insurance or anything like that. So I started perusing on the internet and, you know, my friend was like, hey, you should get on this IAOA Facebook group. So I got on there and had never heard of it in my entire life. Like I said, very just focused on what we were doing and ended up meeting my very good friend, David Carruthers, on there. And that's kind of how it all got started for me. And so then David was like, hey, I'm going to make a reality TV show. And I said, dude, deal me in. And he said, you want to be a coach for Bradley Flowers? And I was like, who's that? And I didn't mean it any, like, you know, well, he's got one of the biggest podcasts in America. So there's that. But I had no idea. I didn't really know. And funny enough, I remembered that Bradley was actually at an event that I was at one time, and they actually recorded a podcast live. And so that was kind of where, you know, a lot of that started with the protege. And then from there, I mean, I really just got to meet a ton of people in the industry, and I started realizing that the world is like, there's just so many good people out there in the insurance world. And I wasn't like opposed to being a part of that or opposed to having friends or anything like that. I mean, I wasn't against the idea. I'd been so focused on what we were doing, you know, I just had never looked outside. And I will say that I think that my involvement with helping other people has really helped our, you know, firm tremendously. I mean, I think whether it's been, there's been a few accounts over the years that, you know, the past couple of years that some other insurance people have referred me because, you know, maybe they didn't have a, you know, a market or whatever that could do it. And, you know, we're very blessed in the, insurance company, arena. We work with a lot of good insurance companies. So, yeah. So, I mean, there's been some of that and, you know, I've been able to help some people really, you know, improve some of their sales processes and whatnot. So just, you know, giving advice away. I mean, I enjoy doing that. And so, you know, it's definitely given more to me than I've given to it. And I think that's what's cool about the business is that when you give to it, it seems to give back to you way more than you dreamed it would.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. It's a great industry to be in. And, you know, there's a ton of great people. And that's a lot of the reason why we have these conversations, right? Is the rising tide raises all boats, right? And we can all be, you know, you can look at each other as competitors or you can look at each other as compadres, you know, as working together for the greater good. So it really is a great industry to be in from that perspective. So, but you mentioned something there towards the end around helping folks with their sales process. So let's dive into that topic here. You know, what does your sales process look like? Just maybe describe it to us when you're working with, you know, lead to prospect to client.
Well, I want to start even before that, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I have been known to go on a rant about this topic. So, you know, just tap your watch or something. If you think I'm going too long about this topic, just feel free. But, you know, and this really ties into what I said earlier about, you know, everybody wants to start an independent agency from zero. And there is a massive education gap in our industry. And so what happens is everybody comes on these podcasts and they talk about technology and efficiency and this, that, and the other. And I'm here to say, and I'm not even against this. I'm not against the idea of this, but like we don't use any, you know, VAs or virtual professionals or whatever. We don't use any of those in our agency. I'm not even against the idea. It's just that, you know, like for me, I don't know how, like, I could provide the education to those people that I'm going to provide kind of one-on-one or in person or whatever. And so what we have chosen to do is we hire people that have a ton of experience and we pay them well. Like, that's the whole secret to what we do, because we're not trying to be like, worry about how cheap we can get our labor. We're not trying to worry about, like, you know, it has nothing to do with that, but it's literally like, we want to hire experienced people and we want to pay them well and we want to let them do their job. All right. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge education gap in our industry, in my personal opinion. All right.
I would agree with that.
You have these people that have been doing this job forever and ever and ever, and they know the forms and they know all the numbers and they know there's 30 some odd additional insured endorsements. Okay. And they all mean different things. And even the ones that have different addition dates mean different things, right? CG 2010 in, you know, 07 did not mean the same thing it does in 2013 based on the addition dates, right? Or 1185, which is what everybody wants. And so, like, nobody talks about this stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And everybody just focuses on the tech, the tech, the tech, the tech. So we really start with education. All right. And so you can believe, you better believe that in our company, I mean, we pay 100% of everybody's education. It doesn't matter how crazy they want to do. I mean, we'll pay for 5 CIC classes in 5 months. Like, we'll pay for CRM classes. We'll pay for certified work comp advisor classes. Like, we'll do all that stuff, you know, and it's stuff that we have gone through. And I just really believe the foundation for getting past the premium, so to speak, is built on education. Right.
I like that nice little drop right there.
Well, yeah. Hey, doing the best I can, but it's all built on education. And I think that education gap is growing bigger because it's easier than ever to do this. You know, like, for example, I mean, I had somebody one time that told me, an insurance person, and I'm not knocking, you know, I guess I kind of am, but like, I had somebody tell me one time, they were like, well, the most that a work comp policy will pay is the employer's liability limit.
What?
That's not what, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's not true, right? That's not true.
And that's like basic knowledge.
That's like basic insurance knowledge. And these people own agencies. And you know, and you kind of think to yourself, like, you know, this person has an insurance license. They can go do anything they want to do. Mm-hmm. They can go write anybody they want to write. And they can tell people whatever they want to tell them. And so for us, you know, we look at that and we say, you know, okay, this is what your symbol one on your auto is. This is what your, you know, symbol two is, what your symbol seven is, what your 8 and 9 and, you know, 19. And this is difference in mobile equipment, auto. And we, you know, you read these insurance policies and you see, you know, all the exclusions, the your works, and you know, the your products and all these different things, right? You start learning all this stuff, even in personal lines. I mean, you know, my favorite in personal lines endorsement is extended non-owned furniture available for your regular use. That's my favorite personal lines endorsement, right? But that's a big deal if you have a live-in girlfriend. You got a live-in girlfriend. Something happens to your auto insurance. Well, if it's furnished, or you have no coverage on your policy for a vehicle furnished or available for your regular use. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. Your girlfriend lives with you. She has her policy lapses. You're driving her car. Boom, you hit somebody. Well, guess what? You got no backup for yourself either, because we don't cover automobiles furnished or available for your regular use, just like company cars, right? So if you got a company car, you should have that on your personalized policy. You know, we don't talk about this stuff anymore. We just talk about how to get more in the door and sell them. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we start like right there. You know, we start with education. And it's like Dave Ramsey talks a lot about having a heart of a teacher. So we want to have, you know, the heart of a teacher when we're with somebody. And not that we're going to like give all these fancy insurance terms. I throw these out for the insurance people. But not that we're going to like have these fancy insurance terms. We're going to talk to people in a way that makes sense, because I hate being talked down to, right? I don't like being talked down to by people. And so we try to simplify our vocabulary when we're speaking to non-insurance people as much as possible, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you walk in to a room with somebody and you have the education behind you, and there's like almost no question they can ask you that you can't answer, right? That's huge. And then you have education about how an audit works, about how a claim works. You can talk about return to work. You can talk about, you know, like I said, the audit process. You can talk about, you know, the rules. You know, if you're in an instance, I mean, there's only a couple states that don't have rules, right? You're monopolistic states, but like whether you're in a state that has its own rating bureau or whether you're in an NCCI state, like the majority of the people that are listening to this, there's a rule book that you can follow. And so, you know, you start taking all this education together and then you kind of swirl that up with some good personality and some good marketing. And then you do a really good job of qualifying people based upon your process and saying and giving them kind of that like FOMO of, man, this process is really good. And then they come to their own conclusion because you're not trying to sell them anything in the sense of, you know, I'm trying to force you to buy this so I can make a sale. I mean, this is a long-term relationship. This is not a one-time deal. Mm-hmm. This is not like a single transaction where it's one and done. This is a long-term relationship. And so we always try to think in terms of lifetime value of the client. You know, what's the lifetime value of this client? If it generates,
love hearing that.
If it generates $10,000 in commission, we talk about it as 70 in our office. You know, we're like, if we can keep these people for an average of 7 years, we're going to make $70,000 on this client. And to me, that should change the way that you view how you call people. That should change the view of how you, you know, you prospect and your meetings and how you view your service.
Is this guy in our office, Elliot?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But you got mics in here listening to us, or you must watch the show.
I mean this in all honesty. I have no idea who you even are. So like you could have the second biggest podcast in America and I would have no idea.
Right. Hey, we're right behind Rogan.
I think it's right behind Rogan. Yeah.
Because I'm you know, I don't know. I'm just focused on what we're doing. But anyway, so like, you know,
you're 100% spot on. That's what we're saying.
But when I think about all this stuff, and I'll put a bow on this thing, is so when you start there, you start with education, you know, you start with building like awareness with your clients and with your prospective clients, and you start creating trust. And one thing that I believe, and the reason that I believe in education so much, is I believe there is no such thing as a neutral transaction. What do I mean by that? I mean, when you call somebody to get some information on a new business account, that is not a neutral phone call ever. That is not just getting a VIN number. That is not just clarifying a driver's license. If it's a client, it is not just a certificate. It is not just a billing question, right? It is a some type of interaction that you're having with them that's either going to make a deposit in the trust bank or a withdrawal. And the reason that people lose accounts is because they bounce those checks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they keep making withdrawals from the trust bank and keep making withdrawals. And then they ultimately bounce a check and they get fired. And so, you know, I think from the very beginning and how you set it up and how you tell them, I'm going to call you on this day. Well, you should call them. I'm going to call you by this day. I'm going to have this information to you by this day. Well, then hit your deadlines. And then you're just setting that precedent up front that you're going to do what you say that you're going to do. You know, and I think when you combine that, you talk about your process. And then we tell people that you don't have to be radically different. Like, I think there's this other thing that I don't like in the insurance industry. And I don't really have a dog in this hunt, so I just say whatever I think.
and you should.
But there's this like thing in the insurance industry, I feel like, about wanting to be a disruptor. Like, ooh, we're disrupting the game. We're changing the game or whatever. Well, you know, last time I checked, these additional insured endorsements hadn't been changed in a long time. I mean, last time I checked, every policy that every general liability policy by ISO says CG00-01. I mean, that's what they all say. So I'm not really sure how we're disrupting that, right? I think what they're saying is we're disrupting the marketing channel. But at the end of the day, what they're doing is they're slapping CG00-01 on an insurance policy, and they're having endorsements that are added and changing that policy, right? That's what they're doing. So anyway, we just talk about, look, is this different enough? And you think about professional golf, you think about Rory McIlroy. He won $18 million in the Tour Championship earlier this year. And I think his strokes gained against the field, like over the whole season, it was like one or something like that. I mean, it's like very, you know, like a very small number.
Super small margin, yeah.
Super small margin, right? But but the difference in him and the in making $18 million at that tournament and, and the guy that didn't make it is like a tap in putt, right? But the amount
of times for a 100-yard dash in an Olympic race.
Exactly. It's very small, but like you think about how many more golf balls did he hit behind the scenes, right? How much more studying did he do of the greens? Maybe a lot more. Maybe he studied, you know, double what somebody else did, and it only produced like a half a stroke around or maybe one, but man, it was $18 million difference. Mm-hmm. So that's the way we talk is like, you know, most people will sell you as much insurance as you'll buy. We help you buy as little insurance as you need. We help you with spread of risk or avoidance. We help with contractual risk transfer. We talk about retention options, and we talk about insurance last. And that's the way that the process works. And then so I think what happens when you're talking to somebody is they say, wait a minute, what do you mean risk transfer? And then you can start talking about, okay, so you, and the way I look at it, the way I say it is, do you know how sometimes when you get a certificate, like somebody will say they want to be an additional insured on your policy? And they're like, yeah, that we do that every day. And I'll say, why? Why do you do that every day? Why do you share your insurance with people every day? Well, I've never thought about that. How many people have you shared your insurance with? You know, you can probably go back to like, you know, birds and the bees with that. But like, how many people have you shared your insurance with? Who knows, right? And so, but we have these conversations, and they don't even realize what they're doing. And so, my job is so easy, and I just tell them, well, this is what you're doing. You know, just from an educational standpoint. And then some of them say, I don't want to do that. And some of them say, well, I don't have a choice but to do that. And then some of them say, how do I do that to the people that work for me? And I'm like, okay, so now we're talking. Now we're talking because we want you to be as marketable as possible to these insurance companies. So at this point in time, maybe you're in the best position that you can be in. But what if you did these couple of things different, just a little bit different, and we provided that documents to them, and we showed them how you were going to go about this, and we provided them an executed subcontractor agreement. What kind of difference would that make? How many more insurance companies would you be eligible with? Because the best contractor markets require that. And with the and this is where you kind of slide in the idea of the BOR. Is like, how much more marketable would you be to the company that you're with today if you did this? And I think those light bulbs, they start turn on, and then you just say, look, does this sound different enough from what most people say to just take the next step? And what they'll typically say is, well, most people, they just want to come in here. They ask me my sales, ask me my payroll. They want a list of all my, they want, and then I just say, they want all your rating info. And so I just say, I think our process is better than just coming in and getting your rating information.
Yeah.
That's what I think. So anyway, and I think that kind of leads into like 2.0, of the process. And that's where I think the rubber really, really kind of meets the road and how we qualify them and how we see if they're ready for the next step and make sure it's a good working relationship. And, typically, that's done over like what I just described is done over maybe, 1 to 2 encounters with somebody. And typically, these accounts are more middle market in nature. They're, 5+ figure revenues and whatnot, kind of at minimum, 5-figure revenue. So they're worth the, they're worth the time. And that's what we're really set up to do. We're not really set up for small business. We don't have comparative rating quoting tools and commercial lines. Like we're not built for that, we're really just built to do what I just said.
In terms of what we would consider a target market client, Josh, like other than revenue, are there other factors that you look at for someone to be a good client of your firm?
Well, I would say that is always a moving target. I think like when I first started, it was anybody was a good client.
You had 100 empty seats on the bus.
If they fogged a mirror.
I think 10 years later, it's more about how do we connect interpersonally. Is it somebody that's, I'm not that interested in people that I think are eventually going to curse me out over the smallest thing. Like I'm just not really interested in those people anymore. And if I pinpoint that very early on in the process, usually it's just I'm either going to fade out or I'm just going to say, hey, look, I just don't think you're a good fit for our process. It's typically how it works.
Yeah. So that when you were talking about the education too, I want to delineate one thing. What it sounded like to me is you guys start with your education, your people's education, your firm's education, and then translate that to educating the client in that first couple encounters. Is that accurate to what you were kind of walking through?
Yes, exactly. I think that I want to have the most educated workforce in my area, state, wherever I'm at. Again, which is why we don't put a cap on our education budget for the agency. I mean, I'm sending somebody to Columbus, Ohio, in January, to a account manager school. It requires, I think, 2 or 3 trips up there to Columbus and, a lot of work in between, but I think this person is going to be way better when it's over with. And ultimately, I mean, the more education somebody has, the more complex accounts they can handle, the bigger of a book they can have from an account management perspective. And so the more money that they can make. I mean, so I think that like when we kind of permeate that education through our, throughout our team, it's like, if you want to do better, we're telling you exactly how to do it, is just continually improve yourself and, you'll ultimately get to where, to where you want to be.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you started there too, because it seems like in this series, that's been a, kind of constant theme that's come up is just education in general. The best folks in this industry from a sales perspective, every one of them, it seems like has kind of flipped the tables and said, well, it's not really sales. It's more education. It's more helping the client better understand what they're buying and better understand how it impacts their business and better understand this process that they're going through. And so I think that's a phenomenal spot to start. And I'm glad you spent the time to discuss that. So then, though, taking that the next step, you said, okay, we have the 1 to 2 encounters. We're educating them. We're asking them if this is, a little bit better. What's then the pre-qualification stage to
I think that's what you said the next step was. Yeah. We're going to really pre-qualify him. I mean, how does that look? And then how do you take that deeper to, you know, ask for the business to hopefully get them to that point if they're a qualified lead to hire you?
Sure. So there's, it's really easy, the qualification process. You know, it's not like a difficult thing to talk about. I think it's mostly just all in the delivery, you know, and, mm-hmm. and let me say this too, like I think one mistake a lot of agents make is like, they will, if there is some kind of, you know, like legitimate coverage, you know, problem or whatever, it's almost kind of like, you got a problem and I'm the one that's here to solve it, you know. And I would caution people on having that kind of approach with prospective clients, because it's almost like, I mean, you can try to spin it like, oh, well, the other person, you know, didn't do what they should have done or whatever. But ultimately it can make it sound like, well, why'd you buy something from this person, dummy? you know, like you don't ever want to be in that position. And so like, when we go through this, the only time that we acknowledge that there's somebody else in the room is what I'm about to tell you when we do the qualification process. But outside of that, it's really all about, hey, our process, we want you to get to a better place. You're in control. You make the decisions. We're here to help you. You're the hero of the story, not us, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't some kind of like, you know, statue we're building to ourselves here. This is just, you know, we're trying to help you get to a better place and make good decisions. So the first thing we ask for is access to information. So we're not going to really play any games around premium or exposure basis or full copies of policies or bust, you know, full experience mod worksheets are bust, you know, full loss runs are bust.
What do you do when they black out the premium on the copy they send you?
Send it back.
Yeah.
Well, that I would say that almost never happens. That has not happened to me in a very long time because of what I'm telling you right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't ever ask, even if they have copies of policies, like on the first meeting, I'll just be like, hey, I didn't really come to get those today. It's very disarming. Like,
yeah.
They're like, what do you mean? I got my policy sitting right here. Well, that's not why I'm here. I didn't come to get your insurance policies today.
I dug them out of the filing cabinet for you, Josh.
Well, I appreciate you doing that. I'll be glad to take a look at them in the future, but we got to talk before we get to that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we got to make sure that you're not a, you fit the right psych profile that I can work with you and you're not going to be an asshole in a year.
Pretty much, yes. And so like, well, but anyway, we'll ask for full access to information. Like, hey, we need full access to information to be able to take the next step. And this is what this means. We need access to insurance policies, full copies. We need experience mod worksheets. We need your HR manual. We need a copy of your safety manual. We need a copy of your subcontractor agreement. And we'd prefer an executed copy of your subcontractor agreement. And we would also prefer copies of contracts in which you have signed that is giving your insurance away to other people. Because based on the language in your contracts and based on what's in your policy, it may not cover those scenarios in which mm-hmm. you think it's going to cover. And that's when they're going to tell you, well, I don't have contracts. So that's a smoking gun right there. Well, we know insurance people, we know, well, I mean, these, a lot of these additional insured endorsements require a written contract. So that's smoking gun number one. And so you get them to agree to that. And then the next thing is, who is going to get me this information? Is it you? Is it Sally? Is it your CFO? Who, right? Bookkeeper? Who's going to get me this info? And then they're going to tell you. And then you're going to say, can I meet this person before I leave? Because if you don't, then you're just a random email or you're just a random call.
That's a great idea, yeah.
So, hey, I'd like to meet them before I leave today. And then you ask them to go, would you walk me down there and introduce me to them? And that way, if the owner of the company walks you down there and introduces you to that person, they're going to know it's serious. Mm-hmm. And then at that point in time, you give the person a list of what you're asking for, right? You just say, look, we had this conversation. Here's the owner right here, full copies of policies, yada, yada, you know, on down the line. And then the premium's just never going to be blacked out. Mm-hmm. And if it is, you just say, hey, look, I thought we agreed to full information. And I tell them, like, we're going to give you our full information. And we don't even care. I tell, like, I don't care if you can give it to somebody else if you want to. You can post it on the internet to be downloaded if you want to. Do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like.
So that's not what they're buying. Maybe they don't think of it like that, but that's not ultimately what they're buying.
Yeah. So I tell them, like, look, I will help you with your sub-agreement, your insurance requirements. I'll help you with any return to work program. I'll help you with any of this stuff, and I'll give it all to you. And if you decide not to do business with me, then guess what? You have a great sub-agreement from an insurance standpoint. I don't even look at the other sections of it. I'm like, your lawyer can look at this. I mean, I'm not an attorney, but like, they're going to have a great sub-agreement, a great return to work program. They're going to have light duty options that they can use for their employees. They can take it to the occupational health clinic. Like, we're going to give them everything that they need. We're going to tell them how the mod works. And there's some stuff in Georgia that's, you know, a little bit unique with the net reporting, net deductible reporting. And we'll help them with that. And we'll help them get drug free because they get a 7.5% off the top discount on their work comp if they're drug free in Georgia. And so we'll just give it all. We'll just do it for you. And then you can choose to do business with us or not. So you kind of remind them of all that stuff. You remind them of most people will sell you as much insurance as you'll buy. Our industry is very self-deprecating about the industry. And then you just hit them. You ask them again, does this sound different enough to you? And I don't know how it couldn't. I don't know how it couldn't. And so the last question is literally almost the only time where you get very personal with the process. And we like to know who the producer's name is for this. And so we'll just kind of ask, like, so who do you buy this stuff from today? And they're not going to name an insurance company. Nobody knows who they are.
Yeah.
My good friend Scott Howell says, nobody's ever bought an insurance policy from XYZ Insurance. They always buy it from Scott, which is the truth. I mean, when they have a claim, they say, I didn't buy this from this company. I bought it from Scott, you know?
Yeah.
But he's right. I mean, I love when he says that. He's right. And I can't go on the rant like he can, but
yeah,
but you know, but that's what he says. And so we ask the question, we find out who the person is, and let's just say that the person's name is Ryan. And if, you know, if Elliot's the owner of the company, I would just say, Elliot, in order for me to get hired, it means that Ryan's got to get fired. And everything that we talked about today, it sounds like it's different enough to you. It sounds like it makes sense to you. It sounds like you're interested in our process. But ultimately, if you're not willing to fire Ryan, I can't help you. So I need to know if you're willing to fire him for any reason. And then that's where you're going to get the objection. That's when they're going to say, well, I mean, I've been dealing with him for 10 years. I don't know. I mean, this dude was in my wedding.
He's my brother-in-law's cousin's sister.
Yeah. Whoa.
Brother.
He?
Yeah.
So anyway.
It's a different podcast, Elliot.
So that's when you find out what the objection is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to know how to pivot from it. And if they tell you, like, well, I can't make that decision today, that's cool. ain't mm-hmm. a, ah, that's cool. I get it. But I'm going to ask you to make that decision at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Today is the day that I'm not going to ask you to fire him today. But at some point I am. I'm going to ask. And here's, I think, mentally where people, they make a mistake. Is people, they focus, like you said in the very beginning, they focus on the product. They focus on the price. They try to build a relationship while they're going through the sales process. But everybody forgets that there's somebody else in the chair next to you. And that everything that you're saying is getting measured against who they work with currently. And so if I'm talking to somebody and they say, my current broker told me that too, I'll say, well, you got some good advice there. There's no need in trying to spin it any other kind of way. Mm-hmm. Hey, sounds like some good advice to me. Why, I mean, why would we say something that's untrue, right? Let's just...
Yep. And all if it's, as it is.
And if it's bad advice, say, hey, I just only have that good advice. And so you just ask them that question. In order for me to get hired, somebody else got to get fired. But you got to introduce that concept to somebody early.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, most people introduce that concept at the end.
Mm-hmm. It's too late.
And I don't. And this kind of like blows my mind. I mean, somebody asked me this question. And they were like, how many people that you deal with make the decision to buy from you in the room with you? Like if I go give somebody a proposal, and it could be the same insurance company they're with, just my findings and how I believe we can improve their position. And I'm just asking them for a, broker of record letter, which is probably 60 or 70% of the time, at least, that we're doing that. Or even if I'm recommending a different company because it's with a direct writer or a company I don't represent or whatever, right? They're like, how many times do people buy right on the spot? I'm like 95%. Like I never have people say, well, let me go talk this over with my wife or let me go talk this over with my team. That never happens. And like, I don't know what y'all's experience is, but in my experience, it never happens. In fact, sometimes I'm caught off guard. I mean, I got a BOR the other day on the first meeting with a guy and I had to say, well, hold on, if you want to do this, like I got to do a little work. So I had to like sit there and type it out on my computer, like right in front of the guy. And then I'm like, does this look good to you? Yep. All right, cool. Email it to him, print, sign or whatever. Sometimes I'm even shocked at how quick it happens. But what's your experience been? I mean, have you seen that if you work a process like that, people, if you're presenting to somebody, they'll just be like, yeah, let's do it now. Or have you found that people will say, let me think about it over the weekend?
I think it all depends on the process. Yeah. I didn't know if Ryan, what your thoughts were, but to me, it all depends on that process. And if you're doing the right activity leading up to that point, the client should understand that, number one, that question is coming. And they're evaluating it all the way up to that point. And so they're going to be prepared with an answer one way or the other, most of the time. There shouldn't be, if we've done our job through that process, there shouldn't be anything that's kind of hanging out there that we don't already know and haven't already addressed that would give them a reason to need to talk to this person or need to think more or whatever. Now that, isn't every time. It's not a perfect process, right? But that should be the majority of the time. Absolutely.
If we can get them to the point where we're able to show them what we can do for them, they know that, we've talked to them about, you're going to have to fire your existing broker for us to be able to help you. Sometimes we give them an option and we'll say, you can hire us for a fee, right? It kind of, depending on the situation that we're dealing with, or we position it as, you're already paying someone to do this. You just can't bring it to yourself to fire the guy because he's a close relationship or whatnot. But I think it goes back to everything that you've been talking about today, which is the education on the front end. And I'd be curious to get your thoughts, because, you know, deals run through my mind when you tell your story and whatnot, Josh. And we had one not too long ago where the client just said, you know what, a prospect, I should say, said, you know, we're happy to go through your process, but we're not moving our business. Like, you've called on us enough. And let me take a step back. You know, the other side of this that we keep preaching is that the businesses that you want and the people that you want as clients are a lot of times the people that aren't going to move. They're not looking for a broker in the yellow pages. You're not going to catch them on a Tuesday morning when you decide to cold call them and they're like, ah, yep, I'm tired of my guy. Like, the clients that you want are the ones that are, they have a deep relationship, and they're probably going to tell you no out of the gate that, you know, I'm fine and whatnot. And so, you know, we had this one that was like, now, you know, we're happy to go through the process, but we're not going to move it. Those are our favorite because it's a true testament to how good your education process is. That's what it is. It's all about educating the client at that point. And then through there, you're able to plant seeds like you're talking about. You know, we made a couple calls on the one that I'm thinking about outside of our meetings and just took temperature and said, hey, you know what? Like, when we originally started this process, we were just thinking that we were going to be doing a high level review for you guys and whatnot. But as we started to uncover things, we can add a ton of value to you. Like, would you be willing to at least consider the relationship? And a lot of times they're like, yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, I'm curious to know what you found out, whatnot. And then we go to the next step, right? And we'll do it again. And then by the time we get to the end, they're like, okay, yep, I'm ready to move. So.
And I think they've already decided in their mind, like, based on any number of factors. I mean, I think it could be your personality, the way you dress. It could be, you know, it could be the way your logo looks, the color of your logo. People like that stuff. You know, it all really goes together. But I do think that, like, I had this interesting thing happen to me, and this is probably like the best illustration that I could give you on this topic. Okay, so I had a girl that was calling on me from a payroll company, and we've been using the same payroll company in our office for a long time. Okay, predating me. The technology is not so good. You know, all the techies are going to say, I can't believe that you do your payroll how you say that you're about. What I'm about to tell you, you're going to be like, I can't believe you actually do this. But I'm going to tell you what I do. Every 2 weeks, I print out what is called a data input sheet. And the data input sheet has all the payrolls lined up. It has all the benefits on the other side. And I check boxes for everybody. Check boxes. And then I write in the commission numbers for the salespeople. And I check yes or no on the salaries for everybody's salary. And I scan that back into my email. And I email it to the company. Okay. That's kind of old school, right?
Mm-hmm. A little bit,
yeah. So this company calls me, very slick. You know, they got apps and stuff. They do. They got apps. We got an app. My agency has an app. I think we've got 2 downloads.
Yeah.
But anyway, so much for client experience. But so the lady's like, you know, we're going to, you know, I got this app. I'm going to show you how this works, right? She couldn't get the thing to work.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great sales process right there.
And I started asking questions. I was like, so
yeah.
Let's talk about how you do your deductions. Let's talk about how we, you know, like, how would the transfer work? Like if I'm paying myself a certain way or whatever, like how would I interact with your company? And then they were like, well, I mean, you would call, you know, such and such number. And it's like, but, you know, the sales rep would be your main person, but like you wouldn't, you know, they would like direct you to the person to actually do it. And I said, well, I work with this lady, her name's Deborah. And I call her on the phone if I need to know how to do something, and she just tells me. Or I just send her an email and say, hey, Deborah, can you help me do this? And she just does it, right? She just does it. And then it just
shout out to Deborah.
It just hit me. It just hit me like, and I ended up telling the payroll company that's calling me, because at first I was like, man, this is just so antiquated. But then I was just like, man, but the knowledge that this lady has that's been dealing with me, dealing with our company, it's the same lady for over 10 years. Like, I was embarrassed that I even took the phone call with the other company. Because I was like, this is a salesperson. They're selling me. They don't even know how to do this stuff. They're just selling software.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and here's the lady that knows all the percentages, the FICAs, FUTAs, SUTAs, she knows everything. And I'm like, and all they're asking me to do is print out a piece of paper twice a month, write a couple things on it, scan it back to them, and it's just going to work. I was like, I think I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's where like a lot, that's why I started talking about education versus technology, is like, that's like where we're at. You know, I would have had more problems by moving to a slicker technology platform in many ways than I think I would have by just sticking to somebody that I know and trust and is proven herself competent, you know? And so like, I think that's who we try to be. You know, maybe we're the people you got to print stuff out for or whatever every now and then, but like, we're kind of like Deborah. Just try to be competent and provide education to people. And a slicker, newer toy is not always, it's not always better.
Well, and what's funny to me on that is I actually think we're getting to this interesting point in our industry where that actually stands out. The, you know, everybody wants the new shiny object that they can go in and, you know, the silver bullet that if I take it in and I put it in front of my prospect, they're going to say yes, you know. And it's like, that's what we're selling. We're trying to find a new carrier, you know, an insurtech carrier or a whatever that we can put in front of our client that, you know, and clients aren't dumb. And so when they do see that there's a competent person behind it, that stands out to them. And so I think that's super important to highlight that. It's like all of a sudden you can differentiate by doing the right stuff, you know, and by being the educator to your client. So we could keep going for hours, Josh. This was really good. I want to wrap it up, but anything that you know, anything else you want to make sure that we tell everybody, or any place that they can where can they get a hold of you if they want to kind of touch base with you on some of these things and whatnot.
Wow. You know what? Yeah, I do have something I want to say. I think that, you know, the business is very important. You know, I enjoy the business very much. You know, and I love everybody. Look, I think there's a place for everybody in our business. Like, I think there's a place for traditional people. I think there's a place for technology companies. You know, I think there's a place for all that. And I welcome that. I mean, we work with some insurtech carriers, and I think there's some that are, you know, they're doing some really special things, and some that, you know, have really, really good solid coverage forms and reinsurance agreements and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm all for that. You know, I think that's really good. I think it pushes us along. I'm just more of a guy that tries to pull in the different resources when they make sense, you know, and
yep.
And I'm not jumping on an insurtech bandwagon just because it's hip. I'm doing it because I think it's going to benefit my client. You know, I believe there's a real problem that you know, what we need to solve. But I don't know when this is going to come out, but this is December the 19th, which is a couple of days before Christmas. And I always tell people, whether it's this time of year or any time of year, that There's a few things that you can't delegate, and I hope people will listen to this part, not just turn it off. But there's a few things that you cannot delegate. It's true. The very first one is your relationship with the person to whom you're married. Okay. You can't delegate that to somebody else. And typically when you do, it ends in divorce. So that's not such a good thing. So you can't delegate, you can't delegate that relationship with your spouse, right? You don't want to delegate it to their Kindle. You don't want to delegate it to, you know, any type of media, right? You just, you want to take care of that yourself. And then the other one is your relationship with your kids. Nobody can be a father, mother to your children, right? But you, they get one biological mother, one biological father. That's it. Nobody can do that but you. Those are the most important things in your lives. And even though we come on here and we talk about all this business stuff, to me, that is the most important thing that I do every single day. And I promise you, even if I was a single guy, I would have way more time, but I wouldn't work as hard as I do because I wouldn't have a wife and two little kids at home to take care of. So listen, it's Christmas time. Everybody have a great Christmas. And know this, a child can change everything, even your heart. So thank you guys so much for
That's
having
some
me.
Some wisdom right there.
And appreciate you very much.
Yeah, appreciate you too, Josh. This was fun. I totally agree with that at the end. You know, couldn't agree more. And I think that's great wisdom for everybody out there. And appreciate you being on. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Merry Christmas, man. Thanks for coming on, Josh. Great chat.
Thank you for tuning in to Getting Past the Premium. We are excited to continue breaking down barriers and finding solutions together. If you would like to reach out regarding anything you heard in today's episode, find links and contact info in the description. Until next time, have a great day, and let's continue getting past the premium.